If you like the Live Wild podcast and enjoy hunting-related apparel, I've got you covered. I just launched some great t-shirts, hats, and sweatshirts under my own Live Wild brand. You can find them now on my website, remywarren.com. I just want to say thanks again, everyone, for all the support, and I really hope you enjoy these designs as much as I do. Who knows? Maybe you'll head over to my website and find your next lucky hat. I'm Remy Warren, and I've lived my life in the wild. As a professional guide and hunter, I've spent thousands of days perfecting my craft. I want to give that knowledge to you. In this podcast, we relive some of my past adventures as I give you practical hunting tips to make you more successful. Whether you're just getting started or a lifelong hunter, this podcast will bring you along on the hunt and teach you how to live wild. This podcast is brought to you by Mountain Tough and Yeti. A lot of the tactics I talk about here require you to be in top physical shape, so I partnered with Mountain Tough to help get you ready for the mountain. With their science-based, hunter-specific training app, you'll get in shape and mentally tough, able to tackle any hunt. Because we really believe this will help you be more successful, as a listener to this podcast, we're giving you 6 free weeks to get you started. Just use code LIVEWILD. It's no secret Yeti has some of the best and most durable gear out there. But when it came to hydration, they previously didn't have a great backcountry solution. Well, that all changed with their new Yonder water bottle. My Yonder covered the backcountry all across the West last season while chasing mule deer, elk, caribou, and more. It's about 50% lighter than their insulated Rambler, but still has that Yeti toughness. The best part is they've now got them in 4 different sizes, so you can pack the bottle perfectly fit for your hunt. To top it off, there's also great options for customization. You can check them out now at yeti.com. Welcome back to the Live Wild podcast, everyone. Now, last week, we looked at targeting mature bulls. This week, we're going to be looking at increasing harvest success by targeting those higher concentrations of elk. So for those of you with a general rifle season elk tag, possibly a cow tag, looking for an opportunity to harvest, this week, we're going to look at the behavior of those younger age class animals and how to target areas with higher concentrations and populations. We're going to do that by first understanding bull elk behavior in that younger age class, as well as understanding the behavior of elk and cows during the later season, so October, November, December. And then we're going to build out tips to help you hone in on a herd. But before we do that, I want to paint a realistic picture of many elk hunts across the West and some of my favorite hunts targeting elk. One of the things that I think is important, especially when we've got a podcast like this and I'm giving out elk tactics, and then there's a lot of people that maybe haven't chased elk, or there's a lot of people that have been chasing elk for a long time, and you know, you hear of all the success and what have you, and I think that sometimes what a traditional elk hunt looks like can get lost in stories and all this other stuff. You know, when you really look at elk hunting success across the West, most elk hunts take place and most of the tags that people can get are in general type areas. So it's an area where it might be over the counter. It's a fairly easy draw. You know, for maybe a non-resident, they pick up a tag and it's a draw, but for residents, it's an area that it's over the counter. So these are what I would consider general area elk tags. And to be honest, that's the majority of my elk hunting experience. Most of my hunts every year are chasing bulls in some form of general area, an area that I picked up over the counter, an area that was fairly easy to draw, some kind of general area. And in these general areas, you know, success, harvest success is actually fairly low. In a lot of places, it might hover around 10, 15%. And when you look at the people who are successful, it's often the same hunters year after year that are successful in these areas because they understand the elk, they understand where to look, they've got a good knowledge of elk hunting and have kind of figured out success in this particular spot. And then there's people that go in for the first time or maybe, you know, every few years. And once they kind of start to figure it out, then their success rates increase as well. But for the vast majority of people going out, a lot of people struggle even finding elk or struggle killing an elk. And that's just the statistics of it. Now, the people that listen to this podcast, people that have more knowledge than maybe just the guy that kind of just goes out there and just bumbling around driving the road. Who knows, right? I mean, even the guys driving the roads get lucky every once in a while. But I think it's good to build out also a picture of what a lot of elk hunts and the elk hunts that most people are going to encounter look like. Because when we do this podcast, we're talking about going into those areas that are low success and using tactics that increase our success rates, that help us be successful, that help us find elk. And so on a lot of these hunts, you know, for me personally, I see elk in a couple ways, right? For me primarily, elk is one of my favorite things to eat. It's one of my number one food sources, I would say. I do a lot of hunting and I try to at least take an elk every year because elk meat's like absolutely the best. So for me, you know, there are tags that I draw and I'll go on maybe I draw a limited entry tag or a tag that's a little bit harder, or maybe I got a cow tag and a bull tag. So the bull tag, maybe I'm just going to be a little more picky because I know that I can come home with some meat on a different hunt. But when it comes down to it, I really want to harvest an elk every year. And knowing that, that can, like, I really feel like setting some kind of goal and expectation for whatever hunt you're doing is very important because it allows you to focus on certain things. And by focusing on certain things, it allows you to have more success. So if I'm on a hunt where I'm like, I want to harvest an elk, I know that success rates might be fairly low. What am I going to do to increase that chance of success? And what I personally do is I target the areas where success is most likely. An area where there's a higher concentration elk, even though when I say higher concentration of elk, sometimes that means that they're very difficult to find still. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm going to go do this and I'm going to see elk all the time. A lot of people are just trying to find an elk to harvest, and that's difficult. But what we're going to do is we're going to understand the herd, what they do, where they're at, and then we can kind of shift our focus and target specific areas and find more elk regularly. When I think about some of my favorite hunts are in these general areas. And you look at, like, you know, most hunts across the West, to kill a 300-inch bull is a really good feat in a lot of general areas. Even in decent general areas, like where there's good populations, a 300-inch bull is a great bull. I remember the first 6-point that I killed that hit that kind of magic 300-inch mark. And I put in a lot of time and I passed up a lot of elk that season. Like, it was, you know, it was something that I wanted to do and I wanted to target a more mature bull and I made it happen and it was awesome. You know, but there's a lot of hunts where maybe I'm guiding, I've got limited time, whatever. And I wanted to make sure that I came home with an elk. I wanted elk in the freezer and that was the primary reason for going out. And so a lot of those hunts, you know, I was targeting elk and it's pretty much first legal bull that I would see I would shoot or had an opportunity at. And honestly, those are some of my favorite elk hunts. I mean, I can think of just a ton of hunts where I've either been guiding in on hunts like that or my own personal hunts where sometimes you struggle for the week to find a legal bull. Sometimes, you know, you don't. But the fun part about it is you come home with an elk. And that's oftentimes, you know, what you're looking for. I can think of one particular hunt where I had very limited time. It was like rolled up to my glassing spot and spotted. It was like I had options of where to go. It was late season. I could have gone high. I could have chased bulls. And I was like, or look for mature bulls. And I just was out of time. End of the season. I'm like, I need a bull elk. And so I went to a place where I'd run into higher concentrations of cows. Good glassing, good feed, just hunting a feeding area. I parked on a knob, walked up to this, it's kind of like this rock pile that I like to glass from. And I'm glassing and I don't really see anything. And then I'm actually looking like a long ways away and in half the distance on this over the ridge popped some cows. Now, at the time, I wasn't allowed to shoot a cow, so I had to shoot a brow tine bull in this particular area. I'm like, oh, it's one of those where you're down to the wire. You're thinking, dude, please just be an elk in here, a bull in here. And sure enough, a legal bull popped over. And so I was like, okay, got to make a play. And it wasn't, to be honest, it wasn't great, like great setup from where I was, where they were, the way the wind was going. It just wasn't great. So I decided to wait. And there's actually quite a bit of snow on the, I guess it'd be the north faces. And then on the other side was more burnt off. So like the way that I would be approaching from, quite a bit of snow. And then it was fairly crunchy snow. And then the other side was like mixed burned off snow, not as much snow. The tops also had that like wind blown, crusted over snow. So there's like two draws in between me and these elk. And I didn't want my approach to be seen. So it's a big herd. The cows start filtering over and it's like, there's one legal bull in this group and a pile of cows. And so my thought was I got to get ahead of them, but I also didn't want the wind to blow them out because it was blowing uphill and probably like there just wouldn't be a shot from above them. So I drop down, they move over. Once they kind of get outside, I drop down, get myself out of sight, go down the canyon, pop up to the top of the ridge, and I'm glassing where the elk are, and I don't see the elk. And so between me getting to that ridge, the elk had moved enough, but I did not, unbeknownst to me, I'm like, oh, dude, did they blow out? What happened? And then I see an elk like right below me. They're probably 300 yards away. And they are moving through this canyon. And it's not, I actually don't have a great view of them. And now they're like starting to work uphill. And there's a bunch of cows and they're starting to ball up. And I'm just watching cow, 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 cow. And then there's another group that kind of balled up and split off down lower. And I'm just trying to like look at every elk because I know I have a feeling that once they get above me, like the wind is real bad. This is not going to last long. And so I'm waiting. I don't see a bull, don't see a bull, don't see a bull. Well, the first group of cows catches my wind. Does the ew, 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 ew. They start to move up the hill on the other side. And actually, they kind of go back across the canyon, which helps me out. But there's enough timber that it's just kind of mayhem. Now elk are moving around. Everything's going on. I've just got I'm laying in the snow, pack set up, just trying to like find the bull. I do not see the bull. Then in this cluster in the trees, I spot the bull. I track the bull and he moves out just in the one like opening. He's surrounded by cows. I have no shot. They are not running away, but they are not, let's just say they are not happy. And then I hit that, I had a elk call and I just wail on that elk call, giving it some really, like these sounds that I'm making, not good intentionally because I'm trying to stop this thing because they're at that verge of like half the herd starting to run. He wants to go and all the cows had moved off and the bull just stopped for a few seconds, gave me a clear shot, shot the bull. It was a nice little 5-point. And I was as happy as if that bull had been a 330-inch 6-point because it's the end of the season. I'd been doing a lot of hunting, a lot of guiding, and I really wanted to bring home an elk for myself. And a lot of my elk hunts are like that where I'm essentially just going out targeting an elk to bring home. And to be honest, it's a lot of fun. And I can think of dozens of hunts where it's like, yep, it worked out. And I went to a place in particular looking to harvest an elk. So I was going to places where I could find higher concentrations of animals and utilize that time that I did have to the best of my benefit. So as we start to move away from the rut, let's say that September, early October timeframe, what ends up happening is the cows now, you know, many have been bred and they start to focus on something different. They start to focus on food and security because they're now growing calves, many of them. And so as a herd, this is how the herd survives. They need to eat a lot. They need to build up that strength to get through the winter to have a successful calving season. But, and they also need to not get eaten by wolves, bears, whatever other predator, mountain lions, whatever predators are out there. So they're grouping up, and that's how cows survive. They're herd animal. They safety in numbers kind of game. More eyes, more looking out for danger, safety, because they are going to be feeding a lot. And so they need that herd security, and they also need to eat. They're growing calves, not get eaten. So that's important to remember. Now, what happens is, we talked last week, those mature bulls, they break off from the herd, and as the season gets later, they start to move away, they become isolated, more solitary, and then they'll probably start to bachelor back up. Younger bulls will do the same thing. You know, it's not uncommon for bulls to break away from the herd. But also one of the things that you get with younger bulls, so let's say like two-year-old, three-year-old elk. A bull elk can go from a spike its first year to a six-point the next year. I've seen it. We've shot plenty of two-year-old six-points doing like tooth-age data, you know, knowing that it's like two-year-old, three-year-old elk. There's also bulls that are 6, 7 years old that never become 6 points, right? I mean, I've actually shot a 13-year-old bull that was a 6x6, but it did not, like, you look at this elk and it looks like a very small, like, raghorn type 6 point, 250 inches. It's just the genetics of the elk. So, you know, just because it's a younger elk doesn't necessarily mean that it's a small elk. It depends on the area. I mean, you can have a four-year-old bull that's got great genetics and is an awesome 6 point for a general area. So, but one of the things that is a little bit different is as those mature bulls that generally run the herd, like those mature bulls have that experience fighting, and they also have oftentimes higher body weight to push elk around so they can run the herd. They become the herd bull. Now, as they start to pull away, younger bulls actually continue to pester cows in that herd, hoping for a second estrus, in which case actually many of them will try to breed. And that can happen into October. Sometimes even later in the season, they just think like, yeah, we're going to run the show. Nobody's pushing us around anymore. But what ends up happening as well is as they transition from that, then they go into instead of going into seclusion, they need to get their energy back. They've been running around from herd to herd, getting their butts kicked constantly. They need to start feeding as well. So they use that herd of cows as a safety mechanism, a safety in numbers game where they're now in the herd. And maybe it's a two-year-old bull, three-year-old bull, where the year before is a spike or calf. They're used to that herd safety. And so they don't really know to break off yet. And they're going to use the herd of cows as a safety mechanism. That can be in end of October all the way through November and even into December. And so as, depending on the area and the type of season, things are going to start changing in these elk herds. So in an area that's migratory, elk are going to start congregating together on this winter range. And the reason they're congregating on the winter range is food. And food on the winter range is in certain places. It's like higher concentrations of food. As we talked about, individual bulls need smaller space. When you've got herds of elk, as they start to congregate, then you need a lot more food. You need a lot more food to sustain the elk. So it's more areas with good grass feed. Elk are grazers. They like that grass. They like that good grass as well, like fescue and other good grasses. And so the areas that hold this good high graze are going to be the areas that start to attract more and more elk. And those areas that have a lot of graze are going to attract larger herds. Often these can be things like burns. Burns are great areas for feed. Clear cuts are another good option for feed in timbered country. And the third one, probably one of the, you know, higher concentrations would be agriculture that attracts them. Any kind of, you know, crop or grass or alfalfa, oats, whatever might be planted, is going to attract elk. And then, you know, the other thing is there's two parts to it. They're looking for food and security. So what are places that hold both food and security? So elk are going to seek refuge to feed, and they're looking for places that maybe are not so hunted. So that could mean a lot of things. That could mean maybe a roadless area, but that can also mean private. And what you're going to find in a lot of general areas across the West in America, Colorado, Idaho, Montana, Utah, wherever, you're going to have areas where there's really good elk habitat everywhere. And then as the season goes on, you can drive around and look on private property that isn't hunted, and you're going to see every south-facing slope on that private property has elk just sitting there, living there, essentially not leaving, because it has what they need. It has food and security, the things that those elk are looking for. So what we need to do is we need to find the places that have food and security that we can hunt. And by focusing in on and understanding, like, okay, there's populations of elk and bulls that are with cows that maybe are grouped up in the herd. Those herds need more feed. Areas with more feed are a little bit easier to identify on the map in certain areas, right? So you can look for those burns. You can look for those clear cuts. You can look for even the agriculture. You can even look for private land, or you can look for those areas that are more roadless, those areas that are harder to get into that also have some form of feed. And then we can focus our attention to those places because we know that that's where a lot of concentrations of elk go. So if you think about one of the things that I will touch on too is, like, let's say it's like Colorado and they've got a first season, second season, third season. You go, which season's the best? Well, it often depends. As the season gets later in migratory areas, the elk start to congregate more in bigger herds. They show up more, they're out feeding more, but also sometimes they're attracted to that private. It's like a magnet of private, right? Because they are looking for food and security. And in those earlier seasons, maybe they haven't made it to that private yet. So every little season, every area has its advantages and disadvantages. Some elk might be easier to find in the later season, but untouchable. And then there's elk that are harder to find, but in places where there's better access. So the places I'm looking for, I'm highlighting those things based off the behavior of elk. And often, now, don't get me wrong, I have shot and guided to plenty of good bulls, mature bulls, in these same places. So like, well, why don't you just hunt these kind of places all the time? And a lot of people do, and I do a lot as well. You're less likely to find mature bulls in this type of country, be 100% honest, but there is the potential. So anything can happen, right? That's hunting. But what we're talking about is targeting specific type of elk and targeting specific type of areas based on their behavior. Because when you start to target something, you actually have more success in what you set out to accomplish. Because you have a strategized plan, you're looking for a certain kind of area, you can cover more country that way. And then you're focusing on something that they need and they want, and that's a certain type of elk that likes that. And that's just playing statistics. You're playing the odds to be in that statistical category of successful hunter. So one of the things that you want to think about is glassing vantages obviously help this time of year. The more you can glass, the better. And then finding those particular areas. Often those areas might be near and around private. This is where digital mapping, you know, we've got our Go Hunt maps and other maps. I mean, even just Google Earth, Google Maps. But having a mapping software where you have private and public boundary lines essentially changed the game for elk hunting. Because there's a lot of places when I was growing up that I had to do either a lot of research and go to offices and pull out, you know, Forest Service maps. And then when you'd get, Forest Service is great because they have like their boundaries. A lot of places, they have their boundaries signs on their boundaries. When you mix in state land, they're just like essentially state land in most states is treated like private land, which most people don't realize. Like, there's very few states out west that you can actually legally access state land for free. It's in most of your licenses. You either, like state of Arizona, you have to be hunting to access a lot of state land. Montana, you have to pay a fee to go on state land. If you just wanted to hike around and you didn't have a hunting license, it wasn't hunting season, there's a lot of things you can't do on state land because it's, in most states, it's treated like private land. And you can actually get trespass violations on state land in some places. So back in the day, it was hard to figure out what was state land, what was private, because it wasn't really marked well. And you need a map and you need, there's no GPSs and you're going off a clock in your odometer and doing all kinds of stuff. Right now, you can just open an app and be like, oh, this is, that's state land. This is public. This is Forest Service. This is BLM. This is super easy. I'll just, oh, this is private. Okay, I can walk around here and get into here. Saying that has changed the game. And it's made elk hunting a lot more successful for those that are hunting the fringe country because it does attract a lot of elk. So using that technology to your advantage, when you find, like, here's an area that has good feed, here's an area that has private, here's an area that's hard to get into if you didn't have private access, but hey, there's a way around. I can spend my time getting around. Now I'm in an area where there's potential for elk. It's got everything elk need, and it's a legal place to hunt. Mapping software has done that for us. And, you know, you can want to fight it, but if you're the guy that's like, I don't like that ease of technology, then you're going to be the guy that's like behind. Because you can find somebody's secret spot pretty easy with just mapping software. Going like, oh, there's places that back in the day took years to figure out how to get into somewhere. And now you can just, in 5 seconds, you can figure out, oh, here's an access point. Here's not an access point. Oh, here's a way around the mountain. Here's not. It's an absolute game changer. But I think one of the things that we want to think about it is finding that type of habitat that the elk that we're now chasing, and it's not always around private stuff. Now it could be flipping on a road layer and looking like, where are some areas that there's not many trails and not many roads that also has what elk need? Food, safety, privacy, getting away from hunters. And that's another really good way to kind of pinpoint places to start. Now, I will say when it comes to finding these kind of elk, right? Immature bulls, herds of cows, your best bet is going to be heavy glassing mornings and evenings because they're tied to food, but they're also tied to security. They're going to be out feeding as long as possible. And that often is just as the sun comes up. You know, elk are very crepuscular, moving in the mornings and evenings. They're probably bedded in their feeding areas, feeding all night, getting up, feeding as much as possible. Then as the sun starts to come up, ooh, it's a general area. There's going to be some, the pumpkin patch is going to come converge on me. I better either get to this private property or get back in the timber and bed. And so your time is probably best spent glassing as many feeding areas as possible because they aren't going to be in every open, good feeding area every day. They're going to be in a certain spot for a limited amount of time. So getting good vantages, getting areas where you can look into those feeding spots, feeding zones, mornings and evenings is going to be your best bet for spotting elk. Now, the nice thing is what we're looking for is we're looking for elk, which could be a herd of cows, a group of cows, a pocket of elk. And then we're honing in on that and saying, is there a bull? If you're glassing at distance, one of the best ways that I've found for identifying bulls and cows is just based on coloration. So you're going to find that the bulls often have that dark neck and that blonde body compared to the cows. Although on my last hunt, that wasn't necessarily the case. In some areas where there's a lot of red dirt and it's like the rut time of year, I think that those bulls wallow in that mud and it stains their coats a little more red, and the cows actually stand out more than the bulls. But that's not everywhere. Most places, Mountain West, Rocky Mountains, the bulls have that blonde body. Now, sometimes you can't tell whether it's a spike or a legal bull. If it's in, maybe it's an area where you can shoot a spike. Awesome. Go for it. Maybe it's an area where you have to have a certain point restriction or 3-point better or something like that. Then, you know, you might just have to get closer and or find it. Now you kind of have pinpointed where the elk like to be. But, you know, figuring out where those concentrations of elk are is really good by focusing on those mornings and evening glassing. And then you can hunt other types of areas throughout the rest of the day. But I would say primarily focusing on mornings and evenings for spotting is a really good way to locate bulls. Now, if you're in an area where there might be some heavy winter range, you can start to concentrate as well on those heavily used travel corridors. These are often the most hunted, but can be very successful. And you're like, how do you figure out where used travel corridors? It depends where the elk live the rest of the year, but often it's areas where from that high country, there's almost like a natural path, a saddle, a ridge that leads to good winter range. And there might be multiple places like that. They aren't all just moving down one trail, but they're in particular canyons or drainages. Think about, you know, the Rocky Mountains, and some of the country's pretty rocky, pretty steep, pretty rough, maybe more mountain goat type country. And they're living up in the mountains around that. And then they're moving down into an area that's more what you'd almost consider high desert or ag land or whatever, where it's like, this is primary winter range. This is something that can sustain elk throughout the rest of the year. And the first ones that come down are the cows and the younger bulls. And so hunting those lower areas, that mid-range mountain, or targeting those corridors early, you're probably going to find more elk in those areas. I know guys, some old timers that hunt the same place in Colorado every year. It's like a migration area. They get the second season, and they sit in one spot and they pretty much shoot elk every year because it's like some years they don't see them. The weather hasn't moved them yet, but most years they have elk in the canyon that they're hunting. Now, it's not like they're walking right to them or they're on the same trail, but they're in an area where they're overlooking a certain spot and they sit there till the elk start moving. Sometimes they don't see anything and sometimes they kill bulls. But I say that to say, you know, oftentimes those areas can be hunted sooner for immature elk. So you can kind of target those areas for cows and younger bulls because they're going to be the first ones to start filtering through. They're doing that safety in numbers. They're in larger groups. That could be, you know, in some areas, a large group elk is 5 to 7 elk. In other areas, it's 50 elk, 30, 50 elk. But the more elk you have, the more feed they need, the more areas that they're going to concentrate on with more feed. So as a rule of thumb, we're going to target food insecurity. We're going to look at the areas that have both those things. And then we're going to think about the behavior of the animals that we're hunting and target areas that match that behavior. So they might be migrating sooner. They might be using those corridors earlier. And those are going to be the place that we start to concentrate. And then heavy glassing in the morning and evening, combining all those things together is a really good way to find areas and good populations of elk. And then once you've honed in on it, once you found like, oh, here's where they are, here's where the elk are hanging out, here's an area that's heavily used by elk, continue to watch those. Maybe there's not a bull one day, maybe you only have a bull tag, and it's like, oh, there's a group of cows, a group of cows, a group of cows. But as more elk start to gather, some of those younger bulls, as the season goes on, maybe you've got a later season, a second, a third season, are going to start gravitating toward where those cows are, or bachelor groups of bulls will gravitate toward where those cows are because it's a good feeding area. And they also can utilize that safety in numbers within the bachelor herd and get on a circuit similar to what the cows are doing. You know, elk, whether it's a lone bull or a herd of cows, often have circuits that they do, patterns that they follow, where they're moving in a certain way for that safety. It's like if they're in one place and there's a lot of predation from either human predators, wolves, bears, mountain, whatever it is, sometimes by moving, they're the safest because they can go to different areas based on the wind, based on not feeding in the same place, trying to be, they're patternable, but in a larger scale. So in a small scale, it's hard for maybe a predator to pattern. It's like if they're in the same meadow every night, mountain lion's going to say, this is the spot to kill them every day, right? But if they continue to move, then it's a little bit harder to be killed. However, they'll move maybe in a 2 or 3 day circuit, 4 day circuit, where they're hitting different feeding areas and different things for that safety. And so we can look for places where that might be possible, where it's like, hey, within a 5 to 12 mile circuit, here's a lot of different areas that elk could go. And here's a lot of that area that might be roadless. A lot of that area maybe includes private and roadless. Hey, we've got the trifecta of things and we can hone in on those spots and find higher concentrations of elk. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that podcast. You know, we're looking forward to later in the season, end of October, November. A lot of general type elk tags start kicking off then. And, you know, now is the time where you can start planning out, okay, where are some places that I can look? Maybe it's your first elk hunt and you're like, yeah, that's the kind of area I'm going to. I really want to find elk, see elk, be successful. Okay, start targeting some of these areas. Think about feed and the way that elk utilize that feed. And then maybe try to find places that are those little pockets where you can get in and it's got what the elk that you're chasing need. And I think the other thing is like the biggest part is just get out there. And if you're in a spot and you're like, I'm not seeing elk here, continue to move. Continue to go until you find that spot. Have a lot of spots like that that you can start to check off the list and look at over a lot of different country that has that those specific things. And when you do that, you're going to just eventually find yourself intersecting with elk. And once you start to intersect with elk, then you analyze and go, okay, I've got elk here. Maybe I continue to hunt here. And this is my spot. This is where I'm going to hunt for the rest of the week, rest of the trip. And by doing that, I think you're going to find that you can be very successful. That's why certain people or the guys that are successful year in and year out, because they just understand the elk and understand the elk in that area. You know, there's two things. You got to know elk. And then when you're in an area, you got to know the area. And when you combine those two things, you have consistent success. I think one of the big factors too, as always, I talk about it a lot, is just having high quality optics. You know, one of the good supporters of this podcast, Vortex Optics, you know, they have a very good range of different things. And when you think about, you're like, all right, what optics do I need? We've talked about spotting scopes, binoculars, rangefinders, rifle scopes. You know, it's one of those things where you always want to add a little bit when you can. The adage is, get the best you can afford. And it's like, we can't probably get all of it at once. So what are the few pieces that I would suggest? You know, my tip for right now is, of course, I think the workhorse is binoculars. A good pair of binoculars is super valuable. And then from there, man, it's a tough call because especially on a rifle hunt, probably a rifle scope. And then having a good rangefinder to use, or maybe a rangefinder and then a rifle scope. You know, there's a lot of different options too for rifle scopes. We talk about long range type dial your turret. And then there's just, you know, the more basic where it's got a BDC, like ballistic drop compensation in the reticle. And that's really good as well. You know, for most elk hunting purposes, you aren't shooting super far. At least I'm not. I'm getting within a good range and making a good shot. And sometimes it's just keep it simple. I'm actually setting a new rifle up for my wife. And I'm like, okay, what scope should I get? And I just decided I'm going to go with a scope that has some kind of drop compensation, but no turrets. You know, it's like just nothing that can really go wrong. Something that's like you throw the gun up, you zoom it in, and you shoot what you're looking at. You give it a range, and you make a good shot. And so they've got a lot of great options for everything in all those categories. And as we're like middle of October, there's probably a lot of general deer seasons going on right now. You know, my one tip to you guys, just as like, you know, we're talking about elk seasons a little bit later, what's a tip that I can use today, right now? And I think the thing is, in a similar way of those mature bulls, if you're mule deer hunting right now, you know, find the pocket and pick it apart. That's one thing that I like to do well is get on a good ridge, get a good glassing vantage, and start to really pick apart the cover that they're using. Now's a good time. Leaves are starting to fall off stuff. If you're in all pine forest, it's a little bit tougher, but find those areas where the deer don't know they aren't hidden yet. That's where I've had a lot of good October timeframe mule deer hunting success. And that's the hardest time. Right now is one of the hardest times to kill a mule deer, but there are big bucks out there. And just having a few of those tactics helps a lot. I know we're talking about elk, but I got to give something to the guys that are like, I'm going out this weekend. What do I need to do? So that's a good little tip as well. As always, if you guys are, you know, if you're, hey, you're in the market, you're like, hey, I like Vortex. Like, there's a lot of awesome products. I need a new something. Don't forget, you can always use code LIVEWILD on the Go Hunt store and get a discount there. So it's probably one of the few places you can actually get a discount on a lot of this stuff. So that's something to think about as well. I'm just going to say, until next week, chase the rags, man. Go for gold. Bring home some elk meat. That's as good of an ending as it gets. Catch you guys later.